1000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 4th of March, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. I don't seem to be able to get onto any of my servers this morning. They're having a little bit of a problem. Maybe they'll be back now. We'll see what happens. See, now I'm on.
Well, you're the administrator. I hope so.
Well, yeah, you would think so. all right, we'll start with a nice story here. CompUSA says they're closing 126 stores. That's more than half of its U.S. retail locations over the next 2 or 3 months to focus on the top-performing locations. CompUSA said in a statement it would close 126 of its stores and would receive a $440 million cash infusion, but it was not specific as to the source of the cash. The company also said it would cut costs and restructure. The company operates 225 stores, which its website says are located in the United States and Puerto Rico. Based on changing conditions in the consumer retail electronics market, the company identified the need to close and sell stores with low performance or non-strategic old store layouts and locations faced with market saturation. The process began last week with the closing of 4 CompUSA stores. And over the next 60 to 90 days, the company will lose a total of 126 stores in the United States to focus on an initiative that to enhance its top-performing locations. So on Monday, CompUSA said it would close 2 stores in California, 1 in Texas, and 1 in Illinois. No word as to whether or not any of that has to...
Well, you knew something was going wrong when you go into CompUSA. You go to the back there, and they're selling, TVs?
Well, they're extending their line. And on a similar vein, Circuit City is going to be closing 8 stores in the U.S. and 62 stores in Canada. Best Buy seems to be the only company posting profits. They had a 7% increase in sales in the last quarter. So it's interesting. People are going toward more general electronics so you can buy your blender and your computer at the same store.
Yeah, right.
Rather than a specific. And then that was always the point of the specific computer stores.
Yeah, but the problem
in fact, I love the commercial you used to run a few years ago. You know, can Jimmy help me? Oh, help me with this computer? Oh, I was working in waffle irons last week.
Yeah, that's the scary part. I mean, these folks are going to these stores and asking for computer advice. And like I used to say, you know, yeah, last week he was working in shoes.
Yeah, right.
And it's like,
well, that's the tough part for a lot of these. There are a number of employees at CompUSA, frankly, who are very good, but not all of them, and it's very hard to know who you're getting and what you're getting, and certainly in places that aren't as technically savvy as Rochester, New York, you're definitely going to find that a lot of the people who are there are not of the highest caliber.
They'll sell you whatever they have the best spiff on and not whatever's the best for your needs.
I got to tell you, I loved spiffs.
Yep. The glory days. We used to talk about, in fact, the other industry, the glory days of Apple, when Apple had a 40% gross margin.
Well, we should explain
now we're lucky
spiffs.
To get 5%.
We should explain spiff.
Oh, yeah. Spiff is an industry term. What it means is I have 3 products to sell. Let's say I have 3 different hard drives to sell. Company A, Company B, Company C. Company B will give me a couple of bucks for every one I sell. Every one of those that I sell, I put on a list, and at the end of the quarter, they give me money. That's called a spiff.
Or a trip to Hawaii.
Or a trip to Hawaii or whatever the thing is, and that's a spiff. And of course, given the choice of selling a customer hard drive A or B or C, I will, of course, pick hard drive B because they're giving me the spiff. And that happens in the industry a lot, and you find that a lot of the times... people will give you a spiff, will sell you something based on the spiff that they get, not necessarily on your needs. I used to love getting the spiffs from Apple and from Osborne because I believed in both of those products, and I didn't mind getting spiffs from them because I was going to sell those products anyway. So that was not a problem for me. I was able to to fulfill both my
what's interesting
moral
is it's
side
not
and,
it's not a new word. It was first in the dictionary in 1859.
Yeah. Yeah, it is not a new word.
Salesman from time immemorial.
Exactly right. And companies from time immemorial have offered spiffs to people, and it's a pretty neat thing for us, not so much for you. And you know, you need to be a little careful as to what you're getting when somebody recommends something. All right, we should head over to the phones. What do you think?
Yeah, let's.
Our first caller is Bill from Gasport, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
I got a little difficulty here in that. I'm not sure if you can help me, or maybe I have to do another way of doing something. I have an external hard drive and everything, an 80 gigabyte on the USB port.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've been trying to do in that is I have my regular BIOS loaded into my internal hard drive, and I don't want any conflicts. So I was trying to do like I did before in that with a master and slave. And so what I've done in that is I had a computer built for me out here, and I put it, like I said, the USB port. And so what I was doing is I was putting some software into my CD drive and everything, and what I would load it in, and it asked me where I want to locate it to, and I towed it to the external USB port drive.
Mm-hmm.
It would load some of the files, then all of a sudden in that, it says it has an error, cannot find the drive anymore. It load the program file, the name file, and I can't remember the other file. It would load three files and then stop, and then it just kept giving me the screen an error message. And
well, here's the thing, though. Here's a couple things that you got to be very clear on.
Sure.
Is when you hook that external hard drive up,
yes,
you've got to go to that same USB port every time. In other words, if there's four of them on the back, you just can't pick any one of the four. You got to constantly hook it up to that one particular USB port.
Otherwise, it redetects it as a brand new hard drive and sort of forgets that it was already on there at some point.
Yeah, the only thing I have on there is just it gives me the drive number. That's all it gives me.
Yeah. Another thing to check is that most of the modern drives and computers expect cable select these days and not master slave anymore.
Yeah, and the thing of it is, though, it's not a good idea, to be honest with you. It's better to put another internal hard drive into it than using an external hard drive.
Or use FireWire instead of USB, which has lower latency and better throughput.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now.
All righty then, let's set the Wayback Machine for 1974.
KC and the Sunshine Band.
All right, welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And for some reason, you're listening to Soundbites. Where did you just randomly find that one, or did you actually go looking for it?
Oh, I went looking for it.
Oh, okay then. All righty.
Cool.
All right, folks, for those of you who are already using Vinda, you should know that there is a new vulnerability. A security vendor has found vulnerability in a medium security rating in Microsoft's new operating system, Windows Vista. The flaw, which is similar to a buffer overflow problem, is a privilege escalation bug, according to Mark Mayfrit, co-founder and chief hacking officer, what a great title, of EI Digital Security, an endpoint security company based in Aliso Viejo, California. The flaw, which EI first reported as an upcoming advisory, is one of the first to be found in the brand new operating system. Earlier this month, Microsoft did patch a flaw in Windows Defender, which is a built-in spyware and security component, which includes XP and Vista, which is included in XP and Vista. Mayfrit pointed out that this new flaw is in the Vista operating system itself, not in a component that's been used in various programs. EI researchers found the vulnerability on January 9th and reported it to Microsoft on January 19th. Vista wasn't released for retail until the end of January, so they actually knew about this before they released the operating system. And what this vulnerability does is let regular users grab more power on the system and become an administrator type. So that's not a big deal for those of you who actually own your own machines, but if you've got, for example, kids and you've given them standard user privileges, they can now use this vulnerability to become the administrator and do anything they want, including turn off site blocking stuff and all that other sort of thing, install their little P2P programs and all that.
One other bit of news that I found, though, you know, because we've been talking about how Vista's been around and everything else. Right now, because that came out in January.
Right.
Now through February, Vista is still being used by less than 1% of the computers tracked in February by this company, making it the sixth most popular operating system. It puts it still behind Windows 98, which is still used by 1.5% of the computers. Vista share is technically 0.93%. XP continues to lead with 84.3%, followed by Windows 2000 with 4.8%. Mac OS X 10 on Power PC machines had a 4.3%, while newer Intel-based PCs running OS 10 had 2.1%. So but it's
that
still,
means Apple's at 6.4%. We broke 5%.
Yay!
I mean, so it just shows the
Well, what's interesting is this is the very first time I've ever seen a company introduce a product and then tell people not to buy it. Microsoft has said, don't buy Vista. Vista will not be ready for the home user for a year. Steve Ballmer
and computers
actually
won't be able to catch
that
up to what Vista needs for a year.
Right. Yeah. Ballmer actually said that. I've never heard the CEO of a company say, don't buy our new product.
Well, here's my main contention. And folks can hear me out and either choose to agree or disagree. When Vista or XP came out, there were two big things that we gained from Vista. I mean, XP over Vista. And the reason why I'd want to go to XP versus Vista is, one, when XP came out, one, I got NTFS FAT, which is, you know, getting rid of the old FAT32, which was an improvement. Plus, we also got rid of the 128 meg barrier of memory. Now, whatever memory you throw into an XP machine, it takes use up and will utilize it, whereas the old operating systems didn't. Now, saying those two things versus Vista, what does Vista gain us? Other than supposedly these securities, which are still, we're still finding patches in that, what big benefit do you derive from it?
And that was a report that came out from Symantec this week. That Vista is fairly secure, but still full of holes.
Right.
And there's unplugged holes. And I don't know if this was intentional or not, but on the page with the news story about Symantec saying this about Vista, there's a Vista ad. So Microsoft is buying a lot of ads, or they just put the ad on a page that said how bad Vista was.
But my big thing is, and my complaint, you know, I mean, it's a cutesy operating system, but what am I getting for my dollar that's really going to help me improve performance or do something good for me? And right now, I don't see where, other than spending a lot of money, that Vista is going to gain me anything. And to tell big businesses and, you know, like universities and everybody else, oh, you got to switch to this. I don't think so, because of the dollar amount. I mean, in today's economy, you know, rising taxes, especially up here in New York State, we're being taxed to death, and you got to be told, oh, you got to now shovel out all this extra money to get these brand new systems that take more power, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, most people should wait until they get a new computer that has Vista pre-installed, but make sure it's enough of a computer. There are too many, you know, $199 computers at the superstores that come with Vista on it that don't have enough memory, don't have enough hard drive, don't have enough graphics, but they have Vista on them.
But what's also going to frustrate a lot of folks, if you've learned XP and now you're going to Vista, you got to learn the whole operating system all over, because they moved and changed literally everything in the way you do it. And that's going to frustrate a lot of people.
Yep. All right. You get that out of your system?
Oh, I got a good one coming up for
you. I don't doubt you do. But first, we're going to go to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hey, Mike, wake up.
Hello, Mike. We have no Mike.
5 second delay.
All right. There you go. Our next caller is Paul from Dansville, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your call every Sunday morning.
Thank you.
Your program every Sunday morning. I have an issue. I have a Hewlett Packard desktop, and I bought a spiffy new ViewSonic 22-inch monitor, you know, big widescreen deal.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful, except that the resolutions won't match up. The monitor is calling for a native resolution of 1680 by 1050. And there is no such thing on my desktop, on the graphics driver that I can find. And I've gone to ViewSonic website, downloaded their drivers, and even called their help. And they said, well, you know,
some graphics cards just cannot produce some resolutions, especially when now we're getting into the widescreen monitors. New
is
graphic
this a
card
TV,
or different
though?
Monitor?
Is this a TV one that you
no,
got?
No, no.
Yeah. It's got the DVI out?
It does have DVI on it, but we're just running with a VGA.
VGA, okay.
Steve's hit it. Yeah. The simple reality is that some graphics cards just aren't capable of the new resolutions.
Are you using the onboard video?
I'm not sure. I know what you mean by.
Well, in other words, when you go to hook up the video to the back of the computer, it's not in like a slot, or is it in on the back the faceplate?
It's on the back of the computer.
So it's not in like one of those slots. You know how you see where those slots would probably, you know, they might have blanks in them, or it's maybe
right. Yeah, it's back in that area. I don't have it in front of me right now, but it's back in that area.
All right,
area.
But, the reality is that the deal is that your video card simply cannot do 1680 by 1050. It's just never going to do it. And you kind of have to match the video card to the monitor you're using.
Yeah, so use a non-native resolution or get a new video card.
Yeah, get it like a, you know, NVIDIA G 7600.
Yeah, but before you buy a new video card, make sure it supports that resolution you're trying to get.
Oh, sure. Is there any way to adjust the text? The text on the screen looks like it's printed with a daisy wheel printer. Is there any way?
Right.
To...
No. Until you fix the resolution problem.
Because you're not at the native resolution.
Right. Until you fix that, that's what you're going to end up with. I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right. We have to take another break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes. The mighty Glenn Lamberts is in. He's going to be giving you all the news and sports and weather and all the stuff that you really listen to Wham for and keep you up to date with what's going on in the real world. At the other side of that, we will be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, and with me, Nick Francesco. We'll be talking about Apple's new TV device. We've got a bunch of people who are waiting to get on the air. Hopefully, I'll have solved my problems with connecting to the network. And we'll be back with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 33 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Shipments of Apple TV, originally scheduled to begin this month, have been delayed slightly, with initial delivery now expected to get underway in mid-March. So instead of just this week, it's in a couple of weeks. Apple announced that delay on Monday. At the same time, the BitTorrent launched its video download store, a service that is likely to compete with the Apple offering. In a statement explaining the delay, Apple said wrapping up Apple TV is taking a few weeks longer than we projected, and we now expect to begin shipment in mid-March. Apple originally discussed the $300 Apple TV last September, and CEO Steve Jobs presented additional details last month at Apple's Macworld show in San Francisco. The device is designed to operate seamlessly with Apple's iTunes online store. Users will be able to choose from feature movies and TV shows in near DVD quality. According to the firm, Apple TV will feature a 40-gigabyte hard drive capable of storing up to 50 hours of video programming. So basically, you buy it from iTunes, download it to the Apple TV, and watch it at your leisure. Is that the deal?
Yeah, but it also works with any audio or video you already have on your computer to begin with. It doesn't have to be from the iTunes store. It's basically an iPod you're plugging into your big screen TV. So it was the fourth piece of their puzzle where you've got your media on your computer, you can watch it on your computer, you can watch it on your iPod, but most people want to watch movies on the big screen TV in the living room. So now this device lets you easily put the video from your computer to the big screen TV.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller,
Hema?
Hema? How do you pronounce his name? Hema from Penfield? Hello?
Yes. Hello.
Hi. How do you pronounce your name?
Hema.
Hema.
Hena?
Yes.
Spell it, please.
Yeah. We have a Dell desktop computer, and recently, just last few days, when you turn it on, it works for a little while, and then the screen disappears. It kind of flashes back and forth, and not sure what is causing that.
You might want to, I'm assuming you're using Windows XP?
Yes.
All right, what you might want to do is go into the control panel, and in the control panel is power savings, or power settings.
Uh-huh.
And go in there and set those all to never. What it's probably doing is shutting down or blanking your screen, say, after 15 minutes or of non-use. It'll blank it, you know, blank it out. One of the other settings is also that they choose to turn on is spin down the hard drive. Uh-huh. And that can mess up computers big time because they don't always spin back up or respond when you hit the enter key, depending on the mm-hmm. motherboard manufacturer and all that. So go into the power settings and change those all to never.
Okay. All right. So now, how it wasn't doing that before. It's just suddenly for the last few days.
One of the updates, if you've done any of the Microsoft updates.
No.
If they do it behind the scenes, in other words, if they've downloaded any of the updates behind the scenes, if you've got that turned on, you wouldn't know it. It would just tell you to reboot your machine. But has anything else been installed or changed on the machine lately?
Yeah, I think new software might have been installed. My husband uses it a lot, so he might have installed it.
Well, then that could have done it, too.
You also might want to check the display settings.
The video driver.
And, and see if it's set to too high a frequency now for your monitor.
Oh, okay.
So check this. If it's 1024 by 768 at 90 hertz, your monitor might not be able to go that high.
Right.
Okay. So it should be around 760, you said?
It depends on your monitor and your video card. You have to match the settings of each device.
Usually your manual will tell you what the video card is supposed to be.
800 by 600 DPI, uh-huh. Around 60 or 70 hertz, depending on the video card.
All right. Okay. Let me try this.
All right.
And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a hard one without seeing it, knowing the specs and everything else. The best we can do is guess.
Well, that's the real problem nowadays with a lot of these products. Yeah. There's almost no standardization. I mean, I just switched from one laptop to another. These all belong to work. I'm just using them, and everything is different. This has 1280 by 800, so it's a widescreen.
Oh yeah.
Thing and it took me a while to get the driver to work correctly because I'm running under Linux and I just
a lot of times too it's the frequency rather than the resolution. I had accidentally a customer brought a machine in and when he plugged into my big screen monitor it set to 1024 by 768 at 80 hertz. He got home to his 10-year-old compact monitor and it could only go to 60 hertz.
Right. And it caused a problem.
Yeah, the resolution was right, but the frequency was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it causes the same kind of problem.
Causes issues.
We find this a lot and there isn't, I don't know what we can do about it in terms of showing somebody's, in terms of fixing somebody's system. There's not a lot we can do about that. Because there's no way we can really tell.
Yeah, because even within brands, say ATI or that, each video card can be totally different.
Yep.
It's not like the old days where there was only maybe a handful to pick from.
Well, and it's not just the video card. It's the match, monitor, as we said, of the video card and the monitor.
You have to look up that specific model card to see what its resolutions are.
With that particular monitor.
The specific model monitor to see what its resolutions are.
And that means doing that horrible thing we call
RTFM.
Read the manual first. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you something. I think you'll understand.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And I don't want to hold your hand.
And if you're at 44 minutes after the hour, this is the music I grew up on. You're listening to Soundbites.
They had music
I'm
like
old.
That?
We had people pounding on drums and grunting. Exactly.
If you can remember it, you weren't there.
That's the truth. I'm told this is the music I grew up on. All right. We're back. Before we get to the phones. Those of you who are familiar with a company called Linden Lab, you may well know them because they are the publishers of Second Life. And next week, Linden Lab plans to launch, this coming week, plans to launch a limited beta test of voice chat in their Second Life virtual world. Second Life users, who are known as residents, currently rely on text-based chat and instant messaging for communication. The voice chat will be designed to simulate real-life speaking with voices getting fainter as the speaker's avatars get more distant. Residents will be able to perceive the direction that voices are coming from if they've got good video cards or audio cards. Avatars will get more animated as the speaker's voice gets louder. Linden Lab expects voice to be particularly useful for academic institution holding lectures in Second Life. What a clever idea that is. Corporations using it for training and friends just chatting with each other. The limited beta program will be used on a test grid for 1,000 users. Formal launch will be in the second quarter of this year. Now, Linden Lab plans to enable voice throughout Second Life. Users will need to have a headset connected to their PC and will be able to speak to each other on voice-enabled areas of Second Life as soon as they log in. Linden Lab will allow voice to be switched off on privately owned areas of Second Life, and they are providing the voice capabilities in partnership with Vivox. So we'll see how quick it takes for the internet to go down entirely once everybody on Second Life is sucking up bandwidth with voice. If they're doing it with voice, how far behind can video be? So we'll see where that takes us.
And that would sort of compete with Skype and See You, See Me and iChat and all the existing video conferencing that you can now get on your PC. And Skype is neat because now you can do phone calls to regular landlines, too.
Yep.
Right. Now, none of that, of course, is at all secure. I keep losing my connection to the Soundbite server. I don't know what that's about.
Maybe
all
you
right.
should talk to the administrator.
I think I ought to. Our next
call. Oh, wait a minute. That's
on?
You.
Yeah, it is. Well, actually, it's Gabe. Are you guys still on?
Yeah.
I'm still in the chat room.
Well, that doesn't count because that's a direct connection over.
I can check this out.
I'm in the forums, too.
All right, if you're in the forums, it's got to be me. I don't know what's going on. All right, our next caller.
You should have someone look at that computer.
Yeah, I may stop using this computer. Next caller is Joe from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. I have a question regarding possible purchase. I have a desktop which has Norton Antivirus 07, Adware, SpyBot, Stinger, and Windows Defender. I purchase things online occasionally. Would it be necessary or beneficial for me to get something like WebRoot Spy Sweeper?
Well, it's redundant.
Yeah, I mean,
beneficial depends on what you mean by that. It's a belt and suspenders kind of thing. You've got all the products you really need to keep your machine clean. Adding those others is redundant, but it depends on how redundant you particularly care to be.
All right, and sometimes they'll fight each other and cause more
problems. That's the bigger
problem. I was
about to
say, you don't want to run them all simultaneously. You want to pick one to run in the background, and the others you can run from the command line as you need them.
Mm-hmm.
But, at some point, you're pretty much done. You're just being redundant.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. Thank
Wind
you.
Wind up spending more Thank time you. Trying to get rid of it and running all those programs than, it's actually going to accomplish.
Right.
Of course, I should say, get a Mac where you don't have to worry about spyware as much because there isn't any yet.
Or a Linux box where you don't have to worry about any because you can't connect to anything.
Yeah.
I don't quite know what's going on. Maybe it's just that plug just wasn't in tight. It's interesting. Like I said, it's a different laptop, and it ran fine all week at work. It ran fine over the weekend at home, and now I'm having trouble. I don't know what the deal is. We're going to take a quick break while I cry into my beer. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with don't touch my beer. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 49 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Name that tune.
Lee Cow. I have no idea.
Are you kidding me?
I have no idea.
Dave.
I have no idea.
I know the tune, but I don't know the title.
It's Raining Men.
I knew it. I said
it
was
no
raining.
One ever hears.
Okay.
Here it comes.
I had part
See,
of
now
it.
Now, we wouldn't have known a song
now,
like that,
Now, wait a minute.
Rob.
I did have part of it, did I not?
Yeah,
it's
you
It's raining.
Did.
I just
All right,
remember
we are back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, we turn away from the world of Raining Men, and we all go put on our little footy jammies. We get our teddy bears and our hot cocoa, and we all sit around in a semicircle on the floor in front of the rocking chair. Because if we can wake him up, it's once again Story Hour with Uncle Dave.
Uncle Dave?
You don't want to wake me up on this one.
Yeah.
All right, folks.
Now, here we go.
I told you before about how Microsoft is, you know, the Vista is still having its issues. Well, I found another big issue. As you folks know, whenever they came out, well, even when they came out with XP, you could go back even to Windows 95, even Windows 3.1. I did it on one of those. Windows 3.1, Windows 98, Windows ME, Windows 2000. With a Vista, an XP machine, I could sit there and use what they called the file and transfer settings program.
That was such a useful tool. Don't tell me they took it out.
Oh, hold your socks. Hold on to your socks.
Well, before you go on, tell them what it did. Basically, what it meant was if
you're
moving
it's gonna
from,
do. You could, I could take all your files and your settings. In other words, all your emails, all your bookmarks, everything except the programs would be moved over. Your desktop would look the exact same.
So you get a new computer and it looks exactly like the old one, just
well,
runs faster.
In Microsoft's infinite wisdom, they said, wrong. The only people they're going to support with what they call the files and transfer settings now is Windows 2000 files only or XP.
So you can't go back to 98
so
anymore.
If you're using a 98 machine and want to move all your files and settings through that real nice program that worked fine with XP, forget it, folks. You're not doing it with Vista. You literally have to do it by hand. And what
Which
I mean
is
by
a pain,
that
takes 3 or 4 hours and costs a whole lot more.
Yep, it's going to take a lot longer to move all those files, which before I could sit there and run this program. It created a nice little package. I could move it over onto the new machine, unpack it, and like I say, your desktop and icons and settings and all this other stuff would be moved over. Now,
especially email, because Outlook always creates those weird random folder names that you can't copy to another computer.
They are now only going to support Windows 2000, files only, XP, or Vista. Anybody with a 98, which is still holding a good share of the market, you're hosed.
All right, hold them down while we give them the shot. It's the end of Story Hour with Uncle Dave as he begins to snooze away. We take off our jammies. We take off, we put away our hot chocolate and our teddy. That's it. Uncle Dave is sleeping again for another week. We're very happy to hear that. We have time for a call? Yes, we do. Our next caller is John from Leroy, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Yeah, I recently
Wait, John, I have a question for you. Leroy or Leroy?
Leroy.
Okay.
Leroy.
I recently had a problem with my computer, and I had to re-download Windows XP and all the updates and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't change the desktop background for some reason.
What happens when you try?
Nothing. I mean, I can go into it, and I can pick what I want, and hit apply, and that's it. Nothing happens.
Isn't that special?
Are you a standard user or an administrator user?
Well, administrator.
Yeah, because usually it'll tell them you don't have the rights to do this.
Right. So this happens. It could be one of several things. It could be a problem with the registry.
Okay.
In which case, just shoot yourself now.
Mm-hmm.
It could be spyware. So make sure that you have. There are certain spyware programs that don't let you change it, but most of those change it to something, some sort of ad.
Mm-hmm.
But I would definitely dance the tango to make sure I don't have one of those.
I do that once a week.
Okay. Then it must be a registry problem. There is a... I have a URL that I'll get to Steve during the break, and he'll post that on our website at soundbites.org. Click on the links tab, and then click on, I think it's number 3, and we'll get that to you. Steve will put that up as we go. We're going to take a quick break. Glenn Lamberts, the wonderful Glenn Lamberts, is in. He's going to give you the sports, the weather, all the important stuff that's going on out in the real world, out in the big blue room. And then on the other side of that, we will all be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. We're going to talk about analysts and what they think the outlook is for Microsoft's online business. We've got a bunch more callers on the line. We've got all kinds of fun and interesting things to do. Of course, we'll talk about our poll and the website and everything else. So join us back in just a couple of minutes. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
The 1,000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website. That's soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about, there's a couple of guys who are sponsoring a day of where you don't use your computer anymore. For an entire day. So the question was, could you stop using your computer for an entire day? 386 of you voted, making it number 47 on the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you. The winner was yes, it's just a tool. 38% of you voted that. Followed closely by 35% of you said why. 16% of you said no, it's my job. And 11% of you said no, it's my life. This week's poll is based on an analysis I saw this week. Despite Steve Ballmer's claims that Microsoft eventually will trump Google to be the number one online search revenue, Microsoft's online business is massively underperforming against the competition, according to a leading financial analyst. Microsoft is actually losing ground against competitors Google and Yahoo in the online search engine and the frequency of search queries that leverage its Windows Live search engine. Since Microsoft ramped up its plan to provide web-based services through the Windows Live and Office Live brands in November 2005 to bolster online ad revenue, CEO Steve Ballmer has proclaimed more than once that Microsoft will chip away at the market until it takes the top spot. Well, the reality is that Google's worldwide search market grew from 56 to 65% between August 2005 and December 2006. At the same time, Microsoft declined from 11% to 8%, even though the company launched its rebranded and revamped Windows Live search during that time. Google continues to be the number one in worldwide online search revenue, taking $10.5 billion, with a B, of the $24.5 billion online advertising market in 2006. Yahoo came in with $5.6 billion. Microsoft was a distant third with $1.6 billion. According to analysts, things are not improving for Microsoft. The strategy they have thus far is not working. So this week's question is...
Especially with all the advertising Ask has been doing.
Yeah, exactly. This week's question is, what is your search engine of choice? And the one, there are 100 of them. I just picked a few. Get over it. I picked AltaVista, Ask.com, Google, Metacrawler, Microsoft Live Search, Yahoo, Other, and what is this search you speak of? So far, assuming I can actually connect, we have 93 votes. The overwhelming favorite, 89% of you picked Google, followed by Yahoo at 3%. What is this search you speak of at 2%? Other at 2%, Ask.com at 1%. Microsoft.com got one vote. And AltaVista and Metacrawler got none. Well,
and that's interesting since the Windows default browser in an Explorer default search page is MSN.
Yes, which is Windows Live now.
Yeah.
And you would think that that would be a little higher up, but apparently everybody immediately changes it. All right.
I've run into so many people who they get that MSN search window up or Yahoo search window up. They'll type Google.
Yep.
In the search engine to find the Google page so they can search for something.
All right. I like it.
Okay.
When you're done voting in the poll, take a look at the little yellow box underneath it. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Oh, behave. Yeah. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
All right, how long is that going to go on? Oh, I see. where you can actually enter an opinion. We know that you're all... I can't get there. No, I don't care. I don't need to get there. The heck with it.
It's only your homepage.
It's only my homepage. I don't really care. Where you can enter your opinion. When you're done there, assuming you get there, look around. Tell me what you think. I have a newsletter that I put out a few times a week. I've been a little remiss in that at the end of the quarter. Life got in the way, but I should be back to doing that on a regular basis again starting this week.
You able to reconcile your teach one period and student next period?
That's kind of what I'm going to have to plan on from now on, along with life just getting in the way all by itself.
Ever walk into the room and forget which class it is and go to the teacher's desk?
No, yes. You're supposed to be out there. Oops.
I find it very hard to sit in a class and not answer questions and ask other questions. Generally, the way I tend to teach is I'll ask people a question that leads us to other discussions.
Yeah.
Except for this last quarter where I had a bunch of sponges who just sat there and never spoke a word ever.
Oh,
ever.
That's boring.
I hate that. But generally, you know, I involve the students and we have a lot of discussion. And what I tend to get a lot of when I'm in a class is I tend to think, well, given that what you just answered, what about? And I have to shut up, keep my mouth shut, and just go with the flow when I'm a student. So far, 93 of you have voted. Come on back to the Soundbite site, check out the forums and all that other good stuff, and we'll all play together out on the internet. It'll be fun. In the meantime, we're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Mike from Avon, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Side note on the using Google, a search for Google.
Yeah.
I know someone that doesn't realize you can type a URL directly into the browser. They will search. They will search for the website that they want and then go through it backwards that way.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know what? As long as they get there.
Yeah, eventually they get there.
Hey,
that's what counts.
Well, here's an interesting. If you Google Google, the first hit is Google.
Wow!
Hey! Is that special?
Yeah.
A question I have regards Internet Explorer browser. I have Firefox. I love it. That's what I use, and I've downloaded it on my kids' computers. I'm trying to get them to use it, but all they know is IE, and they don't want to switch. Well, they have to switch now because one of the computers has gotten some spyware that has taken over the browser, and whenever they try and use it, it just keeps opening 10, 15, 20, 30 new windows.
Well, the easiest...
And I did go through the Tango dance several times, even in safe mode, and they can't seem to clean it out of there, so for now they're using Firefox.
Some of them are really, really nasty to get rid of.
Yeah. Mike, one other thing, though, is you can just go around, even in the menus, and right-click on the blue E, and just delete them. So it literally hides it. You know, wherever it shows up, just delete. You're not actually deleting the program. The program would still be there because you can never get rid of it. But if you delete all the icons that are, say, on the desktop and the toolbar and the menus, they won't be able to, you know, unless they know how to do command typing.
You mean as far as keeping my kids from using it.
Right.
Yeah.
My question, though, is why do you think not using IE is a problem?
Why do they think that?
Why do you think that?
Why do I think not using it? Using it isn't a problem. It's a better solution.
Yes. So what's the problem?
So, well, whatever spyware is in there, should I leave it alone or try and delete IE?
You can't delete IE, but I would still try to progressively go, you know, after it, try CW Shredder, see if that'll do it, you know, the Edward the Spy. Another one by AVG is AVG Spy.
Anti-spyware free.
Yeah, and that's another good utility, too, that you can try downloading, and that gets out a lot, too.
From AVG?
Yep.
Okay, because I was concerned that whatever spyware is in there might migrate somewhere else into the machine.
Yeah,
it certainly might.
Yeah. So try running that one also, those two.
All right? That's the thing I forgot.
What's that?
To add to, I changed the Tango this week. And
I completely,
it took Stinger off, but I completely forgot to add eWidow or whatever they're calling it now.
Yeah, it used to be eWidow, and now it's AVG Spyware 7.5, I think it is.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah. All right. Our next caller is Tom from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question? Tom? Are you there? See, I'm not the only one who can't connect to anything today. All right, we move on from Tom, and we go to Jason in Geneva, New York. Welcome, Jason. What's your question?
Well, my question is, I have Norton Securities.
Yeah.
I got Mozilla and I got IE on my computer. My wife was trying to connect to the internet and it wouldn't go. I ended up shutting off, playing around, trying to get things done, and I shut off the security portion with the antivirus on. And now I can connect to the internet, but the security portion, whenever that's turned on, will not allow me to get access to the internet with Mozilla or IE.
You got
to
open up the port in the Norton firewall.
Remove it. You've apparently accidentally put your internet browser on the
block.
The blacklist. Thank you. So you have to go into the Norton firewall and remove it from the blacklist or add it to the allow list, however they word it.
Well, I've even shut off the firewall itself without shutting off the security to see if that was maybe the case.
The firewall is the security.
Well, when you go into security, there's many different things. There's the parental controls. There's the security. When the security hits the security, I think it shuts off everything else.
Right.
And then you got like the firewall below it. You've got the parental control.
Right. You want to use all of those things. So the best thing to do is to go in and allow your Mozilla browser or whatever you're using, so that it will continue to run. Okey-doke.
So how would I go about doing that? Because I can't find that in the search engine.
Well, it's not in the search engine.
No,
it's in the Norton security program. There's a list of allowable programs, or there's a list of blacked programs.
Or he might have to allow his IP address.
Yeah, it could be the address of the computer is in a blacked range.
Yeah,
so it's in the settings somewhere.
Into the settings of Norton. That you've got to go in and do it. That's why I'm not a big fan of that one. I like the Zone Alarm, which is less intrusive, and it learns now. The newer version even learns, scans, see what programs you've got on there. And Norton just takes up a lot of more space and resources. So that's why we've recommended uninstalling that. You can keep the antivirus part of it if you want, but try use uninstalling.
If you open the Norton Internet Security window and then go to the Internet Security tab, there's a configure button under personal firewall, and you can configure the programs you want to allow to go through the firewall, programs you want to block through the firewall, and then the same thing for the intrusion detection and ad blocking and anti-spyware. So it's the configure button you're looking for.
Yep.
So there you go. All right, we got time for another call? We do? All right, excellent. Our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. I got a question for you. You just started talking about you took Stinger off the Tango.
Yeah.
Well, my question actually was about Stinger. And when you go to Stinger, there's like Stinger, and then there's a whole bunch of specific ones underneath it.
You don't need it anymore.
You don't need Stinger at all?
No.
Well, it's it's that catch-22 where it hasn't been updated in so long because there are no specific viruses that attack the antivirus programs.
Right.
For a while, there was a rash of viruses
that
would make your Norton antivirus and the other antiviruses stop working without you realizing it. So Stinger would look at those specific ones and just find those 20 or 30 specific viruses. There haven't been any like that in a long time, so Stinger hasn't been updated. So if you've been keeping up to date on your antivirus all along, you don't need Stinger anymore. I still see machines that come into the shop where they've never run a scan in years, so I still run Stinger on it.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but well, the thing that is, though, you don't even have to do that, Steve. If you're running the current version of any of the antivirus,
that's the problem. No, their versions are 3 or 4 years old.
No,
whatever came with the computer and expired.
No, what I'm saying, the easier way that we do it here in our shop is we pull the hard drive out. We put it on our test bench, which has the current antivirus, and do a full scan there.
We don't have a PC test bench.
Well, you got to get one if you're going to work on
them. We have a PC in one of our Macs.
There you go.
But yeah, but the all the other downloads, the Stinger 2.6.0 is the real program. The rest of it are corporate versions that you could load into your corporate antivirus if you're running the McAfee the rest of the McAfee systems. Then there's a couple of specific Stinger versions for removing specific other types of malware, but the first one's the only one you really need.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now at 22
to Julio for all this. Yeah.
Yeah. I can tell you've been hurt by that look on your face, girl.
Wow. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
Yes, it is.
All hits all the time. Here
whatever
we
happened
are.
To them?
We're online. Whatever happened
One
to them?
One hit wonders.
All right, before we go back to the phones, here's a piece of news. Careful, everybody. A variant on the Storm Worm using both email and websites to infect Windows-based PCs is injecting itself into the responses people are leaving on blogs. The worm is injecting itself into the operating system as a rootkit, and it is capable of intercepting web traffic. When a user with an infected system visits a bulletin board or posts to a blog, the worm inserts a malware into his or her comments. The line asks readers to look at a fun video and contains a link leading to a website where the malware is waiting to reinfect more users. The worm is taking over PCs, giving the criminal control for multiple purposes, sending spam, launching distributed denial of service attacks, and running keyloggers, which is, as far as you're concerned, the dangerous one. Googling for the different domains from which the worm is working results in several hundred postings that already contain links to the malware. Probably the population of infected machines is more extensive because not everybody posts. A company called Secure Computing is tracking six domains, all posted on the Estonian register, which have been associated with a large volume of malware in the past. Also notable in this worm is that it's using server polymorphism. That is to say, it contains self-modifying code that changes automatically every time it's downloaded. This form of worm has been around forever, like since the bagel worm. Morphing worms are designed to avoid antivirus signature detection, and so far it's working, as few major antivirus vendors have detected it. To avoid detection, all you have to do is not click on the fun video link. And there's a really easy way to find out if you're infected. Just go to a web board and post a message. If it's adding something to your post you didn't add, you're infected. So everybody go out and test. You may use certainly the Soundbites board. If you're a member of Ask Nick, you can use the Ask Nick board and post. The danger is, of course, if somebody reads your post and sees there's a link to a fun video, they will laugh at you because they know you're infected. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Newark, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's your question?
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I know this is going to be a long, dragged-out one. I've got Norton Ghost. It came on my Norton CD. I've got Norton 2003.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and I think that is the coolest program. The problem is I can't figure out how to lessen what I'm trying to do, the ghost area of the Norton CD. I have someone that made me a Norton Ghost backup of my CD or of my computer.
Mm-hmm.
It's one disk, and what it does is it backed up the whole system so I can reboot when my computer, like when I get sick of my computer acting crappy and I can't fix it. I just pop in the Norton Ghost disk, it wipes out my hard drive, reinstalls everything back to the factory settings. Now, when I've tried to do that on my second computer, it always tells me I'm going to need multiple disks. So there's got to be a way where I can break it down where I just want the basic bare backbone stuff.
No. Ghost is designed to copy your whole hard drive,
yep.
Period.
Yep.
There's probably a compression something or other in there somewhere, so it can compress the data to fit on fewer disks.
Yeah. Or
it's
a
really,
DVD.
It's really designed to go to a network or a DVD.
Well, he's got an older version. I don't know if the older versions support DVDs. It might just support CDs.
Right.
Whereas if you got the new Norton Ghost, it might you'd have the option to do either to CDs or DVD.
Now, you're saying that what... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, the one that they burned me is on a single DVD.
Right.
With Norton's 2003 there. So now when I try to do it, though, for my other computer...
Do you have a DVD burner or a CD burner?
It's a CDR, DVDR rewriter or burner or whatever.
And you're putting in a blank DVD disc.
Yes.
You have more than 4 gigabytes of data on that hard drive. You can't back up any more than 4 gigabytes without a second disc.
All right,
more.
But there's no way you guys can say, well, that's because you're adding too many files. I mean, there's no way to reduce.
No, because when you're imaging, you're using the imaging program. What the imaging program does is literally copy everything that's on that machine to that DVD.
Now, are you using this to back up your data?
No, well, I don't want to.
Is
really,
that the
all
point
I want
of this?
To do is back up my OS. And I wanted to just back up the programs
right.
that came with
Ghost
it.
Ghost is not a backup program. Ghost is a cloning program. It clones one hard drive onto another.
Right, and all it does is the entire drive.
Okay, so in other words, and then I would almost have to restore my computer back to the way it was and exactly. then clone it before I start adding multiple other files and programs.
Right.
Yes.
That's
yes.
exactly right.
It's All right.
That's really what it's designed for. Now, if you're looking for something that will just back up everything all the time, you know,
and then just your changed files.
Yeah, I'm a little confused as to all of that, because one of the problems with backing up your operating system is that if you're backing it up in case something dies, if there's a change anywhere, you may find that restoring won't do anything. For example, let's say your motherboard dies, you change your motherboard. Or your hard drive dies, you change your hard drive.
Right.
The system will come back and say, this is all different hardware. I can't run here.
Yep. You got to reinstall Windows over
You got to reinstall anyway. As for all of your programs, well, if you've got all the CDs, that is to say, if you actually legitimately own the copies of the software, then reinstalling is probably not a bad idea anyway, because the thing that most goes wrong with Windows is the registry. And just bringing back a bad copy of the registry will not help you.
Where it does help, though, is if your Windows gets corrupted in some way and you don't want to go through all the time of reinstalling Windows, reinstalling your programs.
Right.
Then you just restore your ghost image and it's as if nothing ever happened.
Excuse me. Right. Or one other thing that you can use a backup or to back up stuff is back what I was talking to is the file settings routine. Whether it's Windows XP or even Vista now. If you do the files and setting transfer program, you run that and you say, yeah, this is the old computer. What it does, and you create a temporary folder, and you tell it to run the program and save it into this temporary directory. Now, if you take that temporary directory and burn that to CD or DVD, depending on how big it is, now you've got at least a backup of all your documents, all your settings, your desktop, and all that stuff for that point in time. And you can store that away. So, you'd like Nick said, you'd load the operating system. Then you could put this CD or DVD in and say, run that file and transfer program. Say, okay, yeah, this is the new computer. Point it to the DVD. And it would put back all your files, your settings, your desktop, and all that. You'd still have to install other programs, but at least the information would be there, and that's a good tool to do.
And it does look like the current version, Ghost 10, does have incremental backup features in it now.
But you still have to back up that one time first.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And if you have more than 4 gigs of information on your computer, it's going to take more than one DVD.
Yep. Right, exactly. Exactly.
Which is usually why we recommend an external hard drive, because they're relatively cheap and you can put pretty much everything on it.
Right. Yep. Right. All right. Our next caller is Patty from Webster, New York. Welcome, Patty. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
Peachy. How are you?
I can't believe you're saying that. That's one of my things.
There you go.
I used to have a business called Peachy Clean.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah. Well, it's Patty with her dumb question, but you told me once no question is dumb.
That's right.
When you emailed me in October.
Actually, Steve asked me an actually dumb question. Never mind. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I called last week, but my fault was I didn't have SpyBot open. Dave answered the email, but I don't know which one to click on. I'm in SpyBot now, and I need to set for updates so I don't get locked in.
Patty, I sent you an email with a picture.
You did, but I don't know which one of these things to click on.
Any one
of them.
Oh, it doesn't matter?
No. It doesn't matter. The whole idea
Whichever
is...
Whichever one isn't busy right now.
Right. And as a matter of fact, if you start to do an update and it's waiting and waiting and waiting, if you cancel it and start it again, SpyBot will pick a different server.
Oh.
So you don't even have to pick one. If one of them isn't answering, cancel, start it again, it'll pick a different one. Now, that one may not answer either. It depends on when you're doing it and how busy they all are. But if you do that two or three times, you'll be cycling through them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's a lot I don't know, so I'm still learning.
Yeah.
Well, God bless you. That's the idea.
Well, that's why I sent you the picture. I figured that would be a little more helpful
That's
for
why
you.
We're here.
Great. I just didn't know which one. Yeah. We got Europe, Germany. America.
Yeah, no.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh, doesn't matter.
There's sort of a general, you know, net nicety is pick the one physically closest to you, but you don't have to.
Oh.
Right, and particularly if that one's busy, pick another one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Thank you. You guys are wonderful.
Thank you,
Patty.
Have a great weekend.
Have a peachy weekend.
Thank you.
Yeah, I figured I was hoping that would be a little more helpful to her doing that screen share.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thanks,
Thank
Patty.
You.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Our next caller is Mike from Victor, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Good day, gentlemen.
It is.
Yes, it is. I just want to start off by saying you guys are one heck of a great service. I love your show.
Thank you. That's what we love to hear.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Do you guys offer podcasts?
Do you?
Do you?
Excellent. In fact, if you go to our website at soundbites.org, that's okay. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Mm-hmm. Click on the, it's right on the main page. One of our links is the archive servers back. Mm-hmm. So if you click on that, it takes you to soundbites.org/archives. And you can download any of the shows. The Beautiful. List of all the shows is up there. Right click on any one of them.
Beautiful.
Select or click and hold, I guess.
I stream those or are they just downloads?
Actually, if you just click on it, it'll stream.
Beautiful.
It depends on the way your system is set up.
Right.
I had three or four different links, but what I found, one was for streaming, one was for downloading. But the problem was, it depends entirely on how your machine is set up as to whether or not those work the way they're supposed to.
Yeah,
what generally happened is no matter which one you clicked on, it streamed unless you right-clicked and said download.
Beautiful.
So you can do whatever you like with them.
And beautiful. Then there's the podcast link that you can feed into your podcast reader like iTunes.
Right, and on the archives, yep. On the archives page is a list to the podcast feed. If you do podcasting to your iPod, you can do that through this.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. Now, my question that I called with was, I got a computer secondhand. I picked it up from somebody there, and I want to know, how do you find out if your computer is being remotely accessed, or you know, and should I go in there and change the name of the computer in order to, or will that negate my Windows Vista or my Windows XP program if I were to change the name?
No, it won't change that. But yeah, you could change. Usually a way you can tell if it's being overtaken is you'll see the mouse being moved around if it was being remotely used.
Well,
or you'll see the hard drive activity blinking
lot,
away
yeah.
when you're not doing anything.
Right. Really, there's a couple of things that you can do. One is to right-click on the taskbar at the bottom and select Task Manager. One of the tabs is your network... what's going on in your network. And if you see a lot of network activity, now you'll always see some because it's looking for email and it's re-authenticating itself to the network. So you always see a little bit. But if you see a lot of activity going on in the network, then you know somebody else is accessing your machine. And in fact, you can leave that up all the time if you want to, sitting in the corner, that's doable.
And there's some tools actually built into Windows that you can run that tells right. you if someone else is connecting into your machine.
Right, and those are under the administrative section.
Yeah, I just found a link I'll post.
And Steve will post the link to all of those tools. But in addition, there's only a couple of ways somebody could access your machine. If you've set up remote access yourself, and one of those links, one of the things that Steve is putting up, one of the things it'll point you to is remote access. And if it's not that, then the only other way really is some sort of virus or whatever. And if you dance the Security Tango, which you can do very easily by going to securitytango.com and clicking the Let's Dance button. So that should give you all you need to clean your machine. So that way you'll know that you don't have a virus that's actually taking things over. And then doing right. all the stuff that Steve has in the link should fix that.
If you right-click on My Computer and open System Properties, one of the tabs is Remote. One of the options is Allow Remote Assistance, which sounds good, but that means that anyone can log into your computer whenever they want.
Right. So if you uncheck that, right-click on My Computer, and click on the remote tab and uncheck that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. If you're on MySpace, I hope you've been paying attention because... two men have pled a no contest to charges stemming from their scheme to write malicious code and use it to extort $150,000 from MySpace. Two guys out of New York, Sean Harrison and Saverio F. Mondelli, pleaded on Monday to single charge of unauthorized computer access. Three other charges were dropped. Both men, basically what they did, they were arrested back in May in 2006. And they began selling a program online. They wrote a program that would exploit a flaw in the MySpace website and enable them to gather personal information on MySpace users. They began selling these programs online. MySpace technicians discovered what was happening and blocked them. Then MySpace contacted them and made contact with them and told them to cease and desist. Those guys said they would not cease, they would not desist. They were developing a new tracker program that MySpace could not block. The two men then told the MySpace folks that for a consulting fee of $150,000, they wouldn't release the tracker program. Legally, we call that extortion. Those two guys traveled to Los Angeles. This is the tough part. They paid to go. They traveled to Los Angeles for what they thought was a meeting with the MySpace executives, and they were arrested when they got off the plane. So I'm delighted to say that that they were taken down. So
we're actually hearing a lot of bad stories about things going on even locally. Kids in local high schools and middle schools even putting up fake MySpace accounts. Taking pictures with cell phone cameras, compromising pictures or sometimes just stupid pictures, and creating a fake page about someone else they don't like.
Right, right, right. Signing up as them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just don't find MySpace to be a good place to be. Yeah.
Facebook is the other one where the same sort of things are happening.
Yep, yep. It's just way too much bad stuff going on there. All right. Our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. I keep getting a driver IRQ not less or equal, shutting down my machine before it can get damaged. I've had Mozilla crash a couple of times, and I lose all my favorites. And what I have is a very heavily fortified machine. I've got software firewall, zone alarm. I've got a Cisco firewall router. I've got Spy Sweeper with antivirus. I've got Adware SE. I've got all this, and I'm using White Canyon Wipe Drive, which also clears all the private data and stuff. I run that every once in a while. And one thing though that I think I got to, with the Lavasoft Adware that I have on here. I went to the website, and there were several different things that you could download that were kind of like standalone to check and see if you had like Virtumonde, Win32 pipeline remover. Well, one of them was Aries Rootkit remover.
Yep.
And before I ran this, I believe it was the Aries Rootkit, it said, caution, this, although this is a useful tool, it could damage your machine.
Yes, it could.
Well, I ran that.
And that's when this all started.
And I think perhaps this is when this all happened. So what did that hurt, and how would I fix it?
You can try going back to a restore point.
Oh, no, because I followed your instructions on the webpage, and I don't have a restore point because viruses can hide in there.
Yeah, but once you run it, you're supposed to turn it back on.
Oh, I haven't been running System Restore for a long, long time. Well, so I don't have anything to go back to.
You lose.
Have you checked your IRQs to make sure you don't have an IRQ conflict? Maybe the message is correct.
Yeah, the big thing here really is that, often enough, the IRQ, is it IRQ or IRQL?
IRQL.
Yeah, that's almost always a RAM problem. Well, no, almost always. The other big thing that causes it is the NVIDIA drivers. Do you have an NVIDIA card?
Mm-hmm.
All right. First, make sure you have the absolute dead latest version of the NVIDIA drivers. I think they're like 6.9 or 6.7.9. I don't remember. Anyway, the point is make sure you've got the absolute latest drivers. The next thing to do is to go to memtest86.com, memtest86.com, and download the memory tester, burn it to a CD, reboot with that CD, and run the memory tester for about 48 hours. Trust me, for about 24 hours, actually about 12 hours. That thing will tell you whether or not you have good or bad RAM.
Okay, so I've got sucked into that RDRAM deal. So I'm running, I think I have 512 meg of RDRAM.
Yeah, that's fine. The point is you may have a bad RAM chip, and this will tell you what that is. But the IRQL, less than or not less or equal, generally is either memory or the NVIDIA drivers. So check with those. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites at 49 minutes after the hour. It's 1180 WHAM.
Right. I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 54 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Apple is advising Mac users to write down their passwords just in case they've forgotten them when they're needed. On the Mac 101 website, Apple offers a document called My Mac Cheat Sheet, which is a PDF you can download. The document adds spaces for Mac users to not just record their Mac OS 10 related usernames and passwords, but also login credentials for email accounts, internet access accounts, and routers. To make your Mac life a little easier, we created this little form for you or your Mac savvy family or member or friend, or since you're a Mac user, perhaps you know somebody who can read and write, to enter all that easy to forget information. Oh, I just went right by Steve. And then stow it safely away should you ever need it. Now, you might think that Apple's gone a little nuts. Actually not. Writing down your password on a sticky note and attaching it to your computer monitor or the bottom of a keyboard isn't very smart, but jotting down the information and storing it in a safe place can be helpful. In fact, one of the things that we do at my job is I'm the systems administrator for the College of Business. All my passwords are written down, sealed away in an envelope, and sealed in a safe. If something happens to me, they'll be able to get them. And, of course, they're sealed, and they're, like you were saying, they're sealed. Yep. You write across the envelope and all the yada yada, and we check it periodically to make sure it's still sealed. Yep. And yep. Everything else, and that's true of all of my guys too. So we're not against writing them down. We're against writing them down in a sticky note and posting them on the monitor. So this is not such a bad idea as it seems, as long as you go about it carefully and intelligently.
And for a lot of people, you set up your computer, even on Windows, you set up your computer, set a password, and then you promptly forget that password because it never asks it again. It automatically logs in.
Right.
So then in 6 months, when you want to install a new program and it says enter your password, you have no idea what it is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Actually, of course, having an automatic login is not a particularly good idea on any machine that if there's more than one person in the house, it's not a particularly good idea.
Yep.
But I guess that's your choice. Our next caller is KC from Rochester, New York. Welcome, KC. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you doing? I got a real quick question. 40 gig hard drive partitioned off. C drive is 10 gig. The D drive is 30 gig. I want to make more space on the C drive because that's where my OS lives. Can I do this just with a couple of commands, or do I have to do something more?
You have to erase the hard drive and repartition it the way you want it to.
Or Partition Magic.
Right, there's a commercial program called Partition Magic that can often repartition on the fly.
Yep.
The problem is how much of that 30 gigs is being used, and if there's any slack room to make that one smaller so it can make the 10 bigger.
And that's the order you have to do it in. You make the 30 smaller, then you make the 10 bigger. What operating system are you using?
SP2.
Yeah, that's what you have to do.
$20 buy a new 40 gig hard drive?
Yeah.
Well, there's that, right? And then
if you can find a 40 anymore, they're getting 60s. Pretty scarce. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Or 80s, rather. 80.
Yeah.
But that's your choice. All right, our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
I use 13wham.com as my home page.
As you should.
Nice.
And it comes up real nice on Internet Explorer. It's right in the center of I have a 17 screen. So it's right in the center of my browser on my screen there, and both left and right side, it's got, gaps like margins. So the page for 13wham is right in the middle. Now, I just recently installed Firefox, and when I installed it and went to the homepage, 13wham.com, it takes that homepage and puts it all the way to the left of the side of the screen, besides my bookmarks on the left side, but it starts on the left side of the screen. Any idea why that browser would be different than IE?
Yes.
Do we say sloppy programming at the other end?
Well, the deal is this. No two browsers quite work exactly the same way. I hate to say that, but it's very true. And unless you spend a lot of time at it, you often find that one browser works better than another because they only ever tested it in one browser. There are ways you can get around that. There are ways you can center something in every browser, but it takes a lot more work, and a lot of people don't go through that. Was that a politer way of saying lazy programming?
Yeah.
it's lazy programming.
Well, thanks for the answer.
I don't lie about about things like that. I
have just been... because IE is has such a high percentage, is that's no reason to lock out or you know make their browsing experience worse for the millions of other users.
Right, exactly. So
if you're designing a web page, you know, understand people are going to be using something other than IE for Windows.
Right, right. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank each and every one of you called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Next week, call earlier and often. Please join us on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis insists we continue to remind you. Vote in the poll. Check out my website, asknick.com.
Oh,
that's asknick.com.
Oh, very nice.
Remember that next Sunday morning, Sunday morning, the new daylight savings time change happens. So make sure you get your computer updated or verify the time and so you don't miss us.
Right. We'll be back.
So we show up on the right time.
We'll be back next week on Soundbites at 1180 WHAM.